to alone at the table. Normally, in this podcast, someone else plays solo tabletop RPGs. Today, I was invited to invite you along for the experience. My name is Metal Steve. Today's game is Thaumaturge PI, a solo mystery game of school shenanigans by regular Alone at the Table host, Audrey. I'm very excited to be playing this game. The solo tabletop RPG games are not normally my thing, but I am getting into them mostly because of my dear friend Audrey. The introduction to this game reads, "The Blackmire House of Magical Disciplines is a prestigious school for young mages. The sprawling grounds and endless halls have long held secrets and treasures. With all the unusual happenings going on at the school, it's no surprise extracurricular detective agencies have cropped up, from clubs dating back to the school's founding to much newer enterprises. Yours is one of the newest, but quickly making a name for itself. Quick, unrelenting, efficient enigma resolvers, or queer. You are a young queer mage, and a detective as well. You are part of the queer after-school club, which consists of other LGBTIAQ+ students. To set up this game, we require a pen and paper, which I have my journaling notebook here, the game itself, a set of dice from D2 to D12, a deck of playing cards shuffled with no jokers. And there's a map that's in the back that is absolutely gorgeous for you to fill in, label the locations on the map, and to fill in for where you find your clues and such. I'm going to use a set of dice that I've never used before that I got at Gen Con, I believe at Gen Con 50. And you never use a whole set of just one set of dice when you play a game that requires dice, right? You're always using more of one dice or less of another dice or not using some dice at all. So this game needing a full set, I knew this was what I wanted to break out. The deck of playing cards I'm using comes from my very good friend Cheyenne. I am going to use my own scrap paper to use the map because I don't have a printer to print it out, but it does look like it would be very fun to print out and have like as an artifact for the game. Now we're going to go and make our character. When we make our character, we're going to answer the following questions. What is your name and what are your pronouns? What area of magic are you studying? With the examples in the book being metallurgy, illusions, shapeshifting, summoning animals, or creating homunculi, etc., etc. Who are our two best friends from queer? And why did we join queer? And what sort of cases do we normally take on? I have created Thistlebee Frangle, who will be going by Fizz for short. Fizz's pronouns are they, them. Their magical specialty is harmonic resonance. So things like the resonance between objects or energy, and maybe kind of dipping into some fate magic. Our two best friends are Asmira, who uses she, her pronouns, and Mitch. That name just popped in my head, and I couldn't get it out. I know it doesn't sound very fanciful or magical, but Mitch is going to use he, him pronouns. Why has Fizz joined queer? Fizz, I think, joins queer to help people in need originally, but as their magical studies go on, I feel like Fizz is going to take on cases that seem normal to everyone else or cases that other people bypass because they don't like pop and because they want to find the secret behind it or the deeper meaning or resonance. For Snoopomancy, I have given Fizz a D10 and I've given a D12 in Thaumaturgy. I think that there's more magical study going on with Fizz than there is detective work, and that's so that feels right to put those points there. When we roll for a skill, we roll the current dice associated with it, which starts as a D10 and a D12. When we roll a 1 or a 2 on the die, we will not find a clue, and we will reduce the skill die down a dice size, going from 10 to 12 to 8 to 6 to 4, and then to 2. If we roll a 3 to 4, we have a meddling success, or a meddling roll, and we find no clue. On a 5+, we find a success, we get a success, and we find one clue. And on a 10+, we also get a success, but we find two clues instead. There are optional rules here to increase the difficulty by reducing our skill die on both failure and meddling, or by starting with a D10 and a D8. I'm going to play the normal game since this is my first time doing so. But I do like that there are optional rules to increase a difficulty or just generally increase replay value. On a failure, something bad happens because of my attempt to find a clue. On a meddling roll, something meddles with magic, causing no clues to be found. And once per game, we can charge up or reset both skills to the max die rating by heading to the dorm room to sleep and recharge our magic. That counts as a location visit, which we'll get into in a moment. So now we need to determine what our case is. There's a chart here, 1 to 6, and I have rolled a 4. So I get the case of the brownie breakout, which says the brownies who usually clean up the classrooms and assist in the alchemy lab have all disappeared and no one knows why. Is something sinister going on here, or is there a simple explanation? The dean has asked you to find out. I will be honest with you. I rolled a 5 initially, which is the case of the deadly draught, and there's a note here for it being kind of dark, and I didn't want to do that for my first attempt at the game. And that involved a dead student or animal, and that doesn't feel like what I'd already set out for Fizz and taking cases that don't seem really important to anyone else. But I feel like other people would have looked like, oh, brownies just disappeared. Maybe that's just things brownies do. But not Fizz. Fizz sees through that. So we're going to roll a d12 to determine the location that we headed to from Queer HQ, which is located in the student lounge, which is location number one. And then we have to answer why we headed to that particular location. So I'm going to pick up my d12 and roll, and I get a 4. The 4 is the student dormitory. So each location is listed in the book and has a short description, as well as alternate presentations, which I really, really enjoy. So that way I don't have to do a lot of thinking if I wanted to like have something different, or again, like looking for replay value in this game, which I really, really appreciate. Student dormitory. Though dorms range greatly in decor, the general layout of the room is the same. Two windows on the wall opposite the door, a simple twin bed, a desk and chair, and a set of two bookshelves. Rooms are small, private, and located on the third, fifth, and sixth floors. The alternate presentations here state that the dormitory could be a studio apartment space, a cabin-style bunk bedroom, a cramped ship's berth meant only for sleeping. And the questions we have to answer while we're here are: how is this room decorated? Whose room is this, and how long has this been their room? And what personal effect or trinket from home is in this room? We are officially in the first round of play. And this is the investigation part of the game. During this phase, we're going to go to all 13 locations with the optional rule of increasing the difficulty by going to 6 or less locations. Each time we go to a location, we're going to roll on a D66 table, which is included here, and resolve the skill using either Snoopomancy or Thaumaturgy. If we're successful, we get a clue. And if we fail, we run into a disruption. And either way, we write about how that all resolves. Then we go to the next location and we keep going from there. We could roll for locations, or we could choose where we want to go because we do eventually have to try to hit all 13 locations. For our first round, you begin in the location that we rolled during setup. We roll the complications table and see what happens and potentially gather our first clue. I feel like this is probably going to the dormitory. I feel like my mind keeps telling me that this is where we're going to Fizz's dorm first, like to get ready, you know? And I think, how is this room decorated? Since we're going to Fizz's room, which is part of the investigation, but I want to kind of get like a little bit of a gear up, you know, a little bit of a gear up montage. Yeah, everybody loves that. Fizz's room, I think, is a single. I think we're going to keep it normal. We're not going to go with the alternate presentation. It's just like we're not going to go with the optional rules. How is this room decorated? I think Fizz is really eclectic, and there is just stuff. Because we're studying harmonic resonance, I think that Fizz is a collector, and because of sensing the resonance between things. So there's got to be like pairs or There's never anything alone in the room, on the bookshelves or on the desk. Even though it is cluttered, everything seems to be bunched up together with things that resonated with the other objects. So, like, the bookshelf probably has some school books on it, but it's mostly just what looks like tchotchkes. To the average person would come in and be like, "This is a mess. I can't handle this. I must straighten things up." And I'm sure that there has definitely been a person that has come into Fizz's room and just like moved something and then messed up the residence and total vibes totally thrown off. Our next question is, whose room is this and how long has this been their room? This has been Fizz's room. And I think that it feels right for Fizz to be in like year three of this school, so junior year. I'm definitely thinking magical college. So it's probably been their room for the whole time that they've been here. And what personal magical effect or trinket from home is in this room? Well, I mean, there's so many. And I'm sure that there's some from home, but as they have been to school and studied more about the resonance of energies, more trinkets are here from school. But I think that like from home, it's gotta be like two rocks from the garden at Fizz's parents' house or from their childhood home. I think that is something that is, and it's probably promptly displayed next to the bed. I feel like that is something at the head of the bed so that you can, end of the night, look at, and first thing wake up, look at the something to remind you from home. All right, so it is time for our D66 roll on the meddling complications chart. D66 again, you take 2d6, one is tens, one is ones. I've rolled a 25. Something you've eaten disagrees with you, or is it poisoned? Ooh, I like that. Maybe that's why Fizz had to come back to the room in the first place and get something to soothe their stomach. All right, so it is time. I think that this is a thaumaturgy roll. I think that there's definitely going to be something that will resonate with Fizz in general, and probably like through some areas like, oh, this rock resonates with my head, this rock resonates with my hands. I think that we're going to look, if we're going to roll thaumaturgy, which means we are taking our d12, and we get an 11, which is great. That means that we have rolled a 10 plus, we have gotten a success, and we find two clues. When we find clues, we're going to draw cards from our deck. I have drawn the Six of Diamonds and the King of Clubs. I hope that's exciting. Let's look at our chart. The Six of Diamonds, an ectoplasmic handprint. Ooh. And the King of Clubs, a sign-in sheet for an event with several names on it. Okay, so we know that we have succeeded and that our complication was an upset tummy. So I think that Fizz doesn't have to spend a lot of time in their own room, gets some stone that resonates. It's like the heal an upset tummy stone, probably a gift from a parent, and holds the stone to their stomach, and the stomach pain goes away. But that means that leaving Fizz's dorm to walk through the rest of the dormitory will show us our ectoplasmic handprint and the sign-in sheet for an event with several names on it. And so we're looking at the brownies that clean up around the school. I think that this has got to be an event for something messy, I think. I think that's where I'm kind of leaning towards. So I think I kind of see how this might be shaping up. So something messy. Let's call it a school dance, and this sign-up sheet is going to be the cleanup crew. And with only having several names on it, but probably not enough for a whole school dance, we'll also then find the ectoplasmic handprint next to this sign-in sheet. All right, feeling pretty good about that. So we continue to the next location. We don't have to roll for our next location, and I don't think I want to because the prompt for this mystery mentioned specifically that the classrooms and the alchemy lab is where the brownies normally clean up. So I think we're going to have to go to both of those locations. So first, we're going to go to the alchemy lab. That is location number 10. And the prompt says, long, high-top tables fill this room, the perfect height for lab work. Vials, cauldrons, and beakers filled with concoctions in various states of maturation are bubbling away. Cabinets full of ingredients are secured with locks at the back of the room. The alternate presentations here are saying on-site zoo or stable, a blacksmith's forge, a pantry, butchery, and cannery. Our questions we're going to answer here are: what recipe or spell is written on the blackboard? Whose lab coat is hanging by the door? And what is in its pockets? And what smell lingers in the air? So for our questions, the spell on the board, I think, is going to be for ghost or spirit summoning. The lab coat hanging by the door belonged to alchemy professor Blorp. Old Blorp. I think Fizz has got a bad grade in alchemy. It's too... I feel like it's a little too concrete, considering it's like this plus this plus this will equal this. And I think Fizz is more about, like, experimentation. And sure, experimentation and alchemy is how you get there. But, like, once you get there, then there's a recipe for something. And you follow the recipe and you get the thing. I think Fizz wants alchemy and magic to be more art than science. And the smell here is going to be, I think, a smell of grave dirt to go along with the spell that's on the board. So now we have to roll for our complications. That's our D66 chart. And I get a 63. 63 says, your parent or guardian has received a call from the school, and now they're calling to admonish or question you. Okay, all right. So we're investigating the lab, and we're trying to dodge some parental frag. Well, I definitely think the call that they get from the school is got to be about some of the weirdness that Fizz has about, like, finding the resonance and things. It may even, you know, let's loop it back to the location. I think this has got to be about Fizz's alchemy grade. Specifically, and ironically, right, their parents call when in the alchemy lab. And I think that they're calling on, like, a sending stone or some manner of rock that is polished smooth at the top and rough at the bottom, that comes with, like, it's got a little drilled out spot for a small stick, like a tiny wand that acts like a stylus. And so I think that Fizz is going to use Snoopomancy on this one, not just because I want to try to use my other skill, but I think that this has got to do with a little bit of, like, skullduggery and, like, managing to appease angry parents. I roll my d10 for Snoopomancy, and I get a 6. And the 6 means that we get a 5+, so we get a success and we find one clue. So we draw from the top of our deck, find one clue that happens to be the 5 of hearts. The 5 of hearts is a marble containing a dream. Ooh, a marble containing a dream. So I think that's got to be maybe like a component. Oh, that's it. That's it. The component, the marble containing a dream, is the primary component for the spell that's on the board for contacting a spirit. Yes, I like that. Let's record that. All right. So we've been to the alchemy lab, where the brownies normally clean up. And our next place the brownies normally clean up, according to the prompt, is the classrooms. Rows of desks are lined up in this simple square room. A chalkboard with a pull-down projector screen is at the front of the room, along with the teacher's desk. Textbooks and school supplies are stored on shelves at either side of the room. Alternate presentations are an auditorium, an outdoor greenhouse or tent, or a school bus. Our questions we have to answer here: which classes take place in this room? Whose notes have been left behind, and what do they look like? And what is graffitied on the underside of a desk at the back of the room? Okay, so I think that this is going to be soothsaying class, or some manner of reading portents and signs class. I think soothsaying 205, we'll call it. So the school supplies that are on the shelves on either side of the room are very few textbooks, but more crystal balls and bones and other assorted teas to be, and teacups to be able to read tea leaves and things. So then the whose notes have been left here. I think that Fizz's friend Mitch's notes are left here. Mitch is so disheveled and so behind in so many classes. So Fizz is like, oh, there are Mitch's notes, and cleans them up. And then what is graffiti on the underside of the desk? Clearly, it's initials, right? H L in a heart with an arrow, and at the bottom of the arrow is a W V. I'm sure that Fizz has no idea who these people are, and this has been here for quite some time. All right, it's time for our complication. Got my D66 chart dice here. Ooh, 5-5. Stepping through the entry of this location spits you back into the hall. What sort of spell is causing that? Okay, so Fizz didn't even get into the room. Interesting. So we haven't seen Mitch's notes yet. What sort of spell is causing that? I think that someone is trying to keep us out of this space. I think some manner of teleportation spell is mirroring the room. I don't think Viz has seen anything like this before, but it is certainly time to unstick this magic. So we're picking up a D12 and rolling Thaumaturgy for big, flashy magic. And I think that Fizz is going to grab a leaf, a pressed leaf that has been sealed, and use that as a component to resonate with the teleportation spell and see how we do. I have rolled a 2. That means that we have failed. We have failed, and we're reducing our skill. Ooh, we don't find a clue here, so we can't get into the room. We find no clue, and we reduce our skill die from a D12 to a D10. Ooh, okay. I think that is very telling, right? This is actual magic that's being used here, and Fizz is just more going off of vibes. So Fizz uses the leaf, and the leaf gets pulled in and taken from them, and we cannot enter the classroom. All right. So it's time to move on to other locations. Maybe it is time to visit the training hall and see if we can talk to some other, maybe, eyewitnesses. All right, with some of our thaumaturgy sapped, we're going to move on to the training hall. And the training hall is location number 6. It says a spacious room with oak hardwood floors marked with lines for various sports and competitions. Students can practice spells, combat techniques, and physical fitness in this space. Climbing platforms line the walls for flight practice, and storage closets adjoin the room, filled with practice dummies and cleaning supplies. Alternate presentations: a gymnasium with workout gear and sporting equipment, a sports field or stadium, and a set of locker rooms. So we're going to go with the basic presentation of the training hall. I really like that there should be someone in here flying. And I think that flying in this instance is going to require cloaks, like big flying cloaks that they can get enchanted for, and it's very basic, right? And I think we've stumbled into a beginner's flight class, like a first year, freshman year flight class, Flight 101. Right. Our questions we have to answer here: what equipment has recently been used, and what was the user doing with it? Well, I've already answered that. We're going to go into a flying class, and the equipment used are the heavy flying cloaks. Ooh, I think it's fun if they turn into animal wings when you use the magic on them. So instead of flying like a superhero, you wrap the cloak around you and it turns into bat wings or bird wings. Or there's probably a student here that has the unfortunate flying squirrel cloak that makes them have the flap of skin that connects their arm to their legs. And it's always a laugh and a riot, and the flying instructor, Professor Egal, many students refer to him as Eagle, and he gets very upset. Who holds physical and magical fitness records currently displayed on the wall? I think for physical fitness, we're going to go with a obstacle course that is somewhere on the grounds, and with the quickest time being listed here. So the quickest time for the obstacle course on the school grounds is going to Kelp Quant. I'm having such a time with names here. And to loop in someone from the beginning, the magical record we're going to have here is for furthest teleportation. And I think that is going to be Fizz's friend Asmira. So now we have to roll our complication, our D66 complication. I got a, oh, that's a symbol on the six. Okay, so we got 56. We got 55 last time. As soon as you step into the location, you forget why you came. Oh, uh-oh. Well, there that is. A forgetful aura on the door. Interesting. So we don't know why we're here, but we do know that we are here. We see Professor Edal flying around with some students. Everyone laughing at the student in the squirrel cloak. And I think that we're going to use Snoopomancy here. I mean, both of my stats are at a D10 at this point, but Snoopomancy is going to have us remember why we're on the case and what it is we're doing here. And I get a 9. Excellent. A 9 means that we have succeeded with one clue. A 10 plus would be finding two clues. So we've overcome the forgetful charm. Okay, I think that what happens is Fizz walks into the gym and is affected by this trickery charm. But seeing the other clues that we have collected, the sign-in sheet for the dance, the marble containing your dream, I think that those are going to resonate with a necklace that they have on, which has a piece of amber that has been set into a smooth piece of quartz. And that is Fizz's like primary, I think. Yeah, primary casting implement. So those things resonate with the charm that kind of like snaps Fizz out of it by looking back at the clues again. And then that means that we find a clue. So we draw a card off the deck. We get the Jack of Diamonds. Ooh, two face cards. The Jack of Diamonds says a bouquet of flowers whose names, when spoken, cast a spell. Are these part of the charm? Oh, I wonder. These are definitely a part of the charm. Maybe they're like over the door. And that is something that sprinkled some pollen down that caused the forgetfulness. So Fizz has found this bouquet of flowers. Each individual flower can be used to cast a spell. We'll say that there's a poppy that has been used to cast this forgetfulness effect. Yes, excellent. Let's record this. All right, looking back over my notes, we have found four total clues, which is important for the deduction phase. So we have found a bouquet of flowers that cast spells. That means it is time to head to location number five, the garden. We need to find out what's up with these flowers. I really love how the clues and the complications are leading us through. Like this is it's very I don't know if it was planned out this way, but it seems to be very well planned out. Our prompt for the garden says food crops are planted in neat rows, and shrubs of all kinds line the edges of the garden. Unusual flowers and grasses fill the edges of the footpaths through the dirt. The fresh air and sounds of small animals are a calm contrast to the chaos of the classrooms. Alternative presentations are a forest or orchard, an open meadow, a zen or topiary garden. And our questions that we have to answer are, what plants are currently in season and growing here? What recent pest problem had to be dealt with here, and who tends the garden? I think that it feels like spring now for me at the time of recording, so I would like this to be spring, and I think that means that a lot of fresh bouquet style flowers are being grown here. Recent pest problem and who tends the gardens? The garden is going to be tended by Professor. Let's get like a really earthy sounding name here. Professor Umber is the tender of the garden and a pest problem we have to deal with. I think I want to name them lordly bugs, like ladybugs, but larger and probably a little more aggressive. And let's say blue with white spots instead of red with black and white spots. So blue with white spots and lordly bugs. Now it's time to roll for our complication. Let's see, our D66 dice have not turned us. We 33. We've rolled two doubles so far. I love that. Some sort of slime has caught your feet and we're stuck. Ah, I love that this is all kind of just like working out for itself. It's really great. Oh, I think that the slime is going to be some leftover remnant of the solution that is used to trap lordly bugs. So not only are we stuck, we are also probably in and around some lordly bugs who are trying to like snap at our feet. So I think it is definitely time for some thaumaturgy, some big magic to probably like jump out of this, like to launch us upwards to try to break free of the slime and get away from the bugs. We have rolled a six. So a six is going to be a five plus, and it's going to get us one clue. So we've gotten a clue here. So we draw off the top of the deck, and we get the three of diamonds. The three of diamonds reads a half spilled potion. Ooh, a half spilled potion. All right, at this point, we have collected five clues. So I am going to move to the third stage of the game, the deduction stage. We piece together the clues. We can only perform one deduction per game. We cannot go back to the investigation phase once we start making my deduction. So we're done investigating. We're not visiting any more locations. We are going to write a hypothesis about what has happened and use as many of the clues as we found. Mark which clues you've used. Once you're done, we make our deduction roll. So my hypothesis is that alchemy professor Blorp wanted to staff the school dance with spirits to clean up instead of the tricksy brownies. We know that there was a low staff turnout based on the sign-in sheet with several names that we found, and the ectoplasmic handprint near there shows that Blorp may have been there with a spirit already and seen the low turnout for volunteers to clean. The marble is a component to summon spirits, which we've already established. The half-spilled potion is the sticky substance that would be used to trap the lordly bugs, but is instead used to catch the brownies. It also says to answer the deduction questions for the case that we chose, which read, where did the brownies go and why? If there was a sinister motive, what was it? How can a situation like this be avoided in the future? Well, I think that Blorp has stashed the brownies on like fly paper, because I think that's funny. In the observatory. So Blorp with the flypaper in the observatory. The sinister motive, I don't think there's a sinister motive here. I think that just that Professor Blorp is trying to solve a problem and maybe doesn't like brownies, and maybe that's the most sinister motive. I think we've been having fun with this, so I don't think there's a sort of dark side to any of this. And how can a situation like this be avoided in the future? I think that Blorp is reprimanded and told to stop kidnapping school staff. if we are correct, but we have to find out if we're correct. So the way that we do this is we start on a deduction die at a zero. So currently to zero. And for every clue that we use in our hypothesis of what happened, we increase the deduction roll die by one step. So we start at zero. We've used five clues. So that brings us up to a D2, a D4, a D6, a D8, and to a D10. So we're up to a D10. If we go past a D12, we add a plus one to the roll for each additional clue used. And again, a one or two, we're going to be wrong, and there'll be a bad consequence for our poor deductions. Three to four, we're wrong, and something strange happens. Or at a five plus, we're right, and we have successfully solved the mystery. Here we go. And I have rolled a two. I am wrong. Professor Blorp is not the perpetrator of the missing brownies. There's a bad consequence for my board deductions. I believe that Fizz is going to get into a lot of trouble for accusing a teacher of something mischievous when, in fact, the brownies are just on a migratory period, I'd say. And we thought that there was something going on. And it really is just Blorp trying to replace the brownie workers because they're on like vacation and they needed to provide a substitute workforce. And I believe that the dean is very mad at Fizz, but this is probably not the first time that Fizz has really been in trouble in situations like this, considering the nature of their love of the resonance between objects and fate and general eclectic nature. I loved this experience. I thought it was very cool. We could have kept going. We only visited five, looked six locations. So we could have gone to 13, but for the sake of the podcast, I wanted to keep it brief, or at least as brief as possible. And I think I would have, in playing this myself, would have kept going, would have tried to find at least two more clues to get me that D12 plus one roll. Let's just do that now and see what would have happened. Oh, I rolled a two on the D12 as well. So this was doomed to failure from the start. So I truly enjoyed this game. I really love the alternate presentation so that you could try to tailor your experience in the locations to whatever setting you want to put them in. The complication chart is so fleshed out, and it really, like, everything kind of was easy to tie together. I didn't have to do a whole lot of work to string any of the bits together. The clues are wonderful. There's a huge list of clues here, and it is very user-friendly in its presentation and its use. I truly enjoyed Thaumaturge PI, a solo mystery game of school shenanigans.
Hey CJ, is that GoHooligans promo ready yet?
Sure is, PB. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Hello, owlets! I can hear your beaks chirring with the whos, the whys, and other forbidden questions about Catherine Lasky's Guardians of Gahool. Join us, the GoHooligans, twice every dwanking in the Great Blue Yonder for some Glocksgiven spronk, some laughter therapy, and some subglossous ransacking of literary merit.
Okay, I only understood about a third of that. And did you use an owl swear in there?
No? You didn't do the assigned reading?
No, that's your job, CJ. I'm just here for the owl facts.
Well, we'll have to work on your vocabulary.
I guess you'll have to teach me every other week on GoHooligans.
Only on the Moonshot Network.